So the topic of Kavod Chaverim, if I'm not mistaken, was the month of Sivan, and we decided to flip it to Tammuz. So that's the topic that I'm planning on spending a few minutes tonight discussing with you. So first, just a little bit of background. I always like it when a speaker comes in and they tell a little bit about, you know, where they're coming from, because oftentimes you really don't know, and you know, it helps you judge the message, it helps you judge the person, and just put them in context. So my background, I grew up here in Atlanta. I became formerly Yeshiva High School, Hebrew Academy, Yeshiva High School, and I was in Israel for a year, and then was in Eretz Yisrael in Baltimore. I suspect you've probably heard of Baltimore. For 7 years before, my wife allowed me to find her, and then 2 more years in Kolo, and then came back as a Rebbe in Yeshiva High School. I was there for 6 years, and part of that experience was schmoozing with kids informally. My background really was in business. My father wanted me to get a degree in business. That's why I went, had a degree in business. But I did a lot of informal counseling, you know, just schmoozing with kids there. And then decided to go back for a master's in counseling, like to really get a degree and find out what, you know, what, although we have, and there's a whole topic in and of itself, although we have very mixed feelings about psychology and Torah, and, you know, as Torah observant Jews, psychology is kind of a, you know, it's a mixed blessing. But I went back for a master's in counseling, and it was a mixed blessing. A lot of it was good, a lot of it was really, really, really not good. Anyone in that program or been in that program, Masters of Counseling? Lots, you know, lots. It's kind of a popular program here in Atlanta, Georgia State. But at any rate, it was a very mixed bag. And now Rosh Hashem B'nai Tamima for the last 4 years as Halacha Rebbe. And one of my projects right now is the last 3 years or so is JMI, is the Jewish Marriage Initiative, which I think I spoke about a little bit last time. So I'd like to touch on that at the end. JMI, in my mind, is to work with Dr. Habif, I should mention first. She and I have kind of put this together over the years together. So in my mind, in a certain sense, it's Torah, it's Chochmas Hashem, it's Torah, it's Hashkafa, it's working on oneself and relationships and ultimately marriage. Borrowing from psychology wherever we can. That's kind of the approach that we take. I think most, you know, Shomer Torah mitzvos, mental health professionals, that's the approach that we take. The Torah is the foundation, the Torah is emes, it's you know, it's the truth, it's Chachmas Hashem. But there's certain interventions, certain ideas, certain approaches, certain, you know, things from the world of psychology that we can borrow. It's famous Gemara Megillah, Chachma, Begoyim Tamin. You know, there's certainly a tremendous amount of wisdom in the secular world. We see that in a lot of ways. You know, some things are a lot easier, you know. Medicine, for example, it doesn't infringe usually on our beliefs. Psychology, because it has to do with people and how they work and what motivates it, you know, it gets into a lot of very difficult areas. But be that as it may, Shmuel Kamenetsky Shlita, for example, told me, I asked him about reading this stuff. So he told me, take the Ochel and leave the Psolas, which is a line from the Gemara and Shabbos about Borer. We're all familiar that Borer and Shabbos means you take what's good and leave behind what's bad. You're not allowed to do the opposite. So that was his message to me about psychology, was there's a lot of bad stuff in it, which is the premise of my question. But under the circumstances, and not everyone would say this, there are definitely Gedolim that would not agree with him, but under the circumstances, take what's good and leave behind what's bad. So that's, you know, that's the approach of all of the Shom Shabbos mental health professionals that are out there, and there are many, Baruch Hashem. So JMI is a product of that. And our goal is to tackle what is, I would argue, the single biggest problem facing Klal Yisrael, maybe we're top two facing Klal Yisrael, and that is relationships and families not being healthy, not being solid, not being sturdy, not being durable the way they used to be. I mean, 50 years ago, probably no one would have believed that this was an issue. And 50 years ago, it was assimilation, it was Kiruv, which is still a big challenge. It was day schools, it was a lot of things. It was women's education, adult education in general. Yeah, there's a lot of issues on the table. Many of them have been addressed significantly. We have a long way to go, but you know, Russia, there is a Tamima High School. There is a lot of day school. You know, a lot of things have been done, curative organizations. But you know, every door has its own Nisayan, the Footner writes and many others. every generation has its issue, and now the issue today, I think, is relationships in general, which culminate in marriage, which and the issues that you know, the problems that come out in relationships come out in marriage. So the whole issue, really, in my mind, is an issue of kavod. You know, talking about kavod chaverim and showing kavod to others. That's, I think, what it boils down to. Revolba, a lot of what I'm going to share with you tonight is based on Ali Shor, the second chelik of Shlomo Revolba. That's all. He points out that kavod is giving kavod to someone else. It's saying the word, it's more than just the shorish, it's really the same word, is kaved, is heavy, is weighty. So when we show kavod to somebody else, we are showing that they matter, that it makes a difference, that there's something there, that there's not someone just ignore. There's something very special about that other person. And the flip side of that is kal, my light, which he says is a shorish of klola. So I've never thought of, you know, on my own before. It's klola, of course, being curse. So bracha and klola, we see in different psukim, the opposites of each other, is really based on how seriously we take something. Right? Do we take it seriously and then we're able to grow with it and move with it and build it into what Hashem wants us to build it into? Or the opposite, do we take it very lightly and callously and we don't appreciate it and we don't really, you know, recognize that it's there, and then it's a klal, then it's a curse. You can't get anything out, you can't get out of, you know, out of something which you don't appreciate, which you don't think is really there. So that, you know, for a long list of reasons, we can probably, you know, if you sat here brainstorming, we probably come up with 10 or 15 reasons why this is true today. Technology is one of them. Multitasking, the pace, the hectic pace of our lives, all these different things lead us to take things that are really important and take them very lightly, and not take them very seriously at all. And I've seen, you know, not that much older than you all, I've just seen in my lifetime how, you know, I remember before cell phones and before email and before when we first got married 15 years ago, Baruch Hashem, I bought my wife a phone. You know, she should have a phone. A lady driving around should have a phone. But I swore, you know, and swear, but I said, I'll never buy a phone. Who needs it? You know, that didn't last very long. You know, I was running a camp and I said, okay, for camp I need a phone. You know, there's no other phone. It just, and then a car, and it's just crazy. I'm still holding out from buying a smartphone, so we'll see how long that lasts. But, you know, there's a variety of different things, the media, Hollywood, there's a long list of reasons why we don't take life, things in life, seriously enough. And this isn't our topic right now, but, you know, certainly that doesn't mean, taking life seriously, chas v'shalom, is not meaning morose or sad or, you know, chas v'shalom, right? Judaism is all but simchas achayim. But simcha only comes from realizing what you got, right? It, you know, a sports car sitting, this is more relevant, I guess, for the guys, but you have a sports car sitting in the driveway, you don't appreciate what it can do, well, you know, it doesn't give you the simcha and the geschmack, and whatever you can get or whatever it is, unless you appreciate what it, you know, what it is. So that's, it's a disease. It really is, I think, a disease in our world, in our whole society, that we have to work hard to fight against. And again, that's the relationships. We'll talk a little bit about our relationship, you know, just how we view ourselves. Our relationship to others is the main topic, really. And then I would like to talk a little bit about marriage and the idea of marriage and you know, that. And then maybe, okay, we'll see how we... So, Revolba points out, and this is really the theme of what I want to share with you tonight, Revolba points out that when one person shows kavod to another person, they are, it's not just nice, right? We have a mitzvah of doing chesed, and we share with other people, or show kavod to somebody else, kavod meaning complimenting, kavod meaning getting them a drink, kavod meaning, you know, whatever long list of things that we can do as far as kavod goes. It's not just a nice thing, it's not just a mitzvah, it's not just, but it's more than that, Revolba says. It is allowing that person to connect with who they are, who they truly are. Because ultimately, there's a chaplain in the U.S. Army named Steinberg. He comes through Atlanta every once in a while. I think he lives in Eretz Israel, interestingly enough. He's a U.S. chaplain. He's a captain or a major or whatever. And he's stationed officially in South Georgia, Fort Benning, I think it is. He comes through here every once in a while. So, a fascinating Jew, Talmud Chacham, I mean, really very interesting man. He's writing a sefer actually on words, like kavod and kavod, you know, that type of stuff. He's writing a dictionary and explaining the connections, which I find fascinating. The Malbim discusses a lot with Hirsch. So he's putting it together in like a dictionary, I think a dictionary type of thing. Anyway, along the same lines, I was talking with him about Satan, about, you know, Malach HaMavis, about that angel, so to speak, that's out there, Hashem creates to get us off, you know, to get us to sin, to get us to stumble. So, which is a whole fascinating conversation in and of itself. He says, if you look at psukim and that word, and what the word really means, is not that just as this, you know, Hollywood makes us think, is this, or the Christians make us think, is this, you know, red guy with a pitchfork. That's not at all what he is. He is the force in the world which gets us off track. His job is simply, you're going down the track, you know what the right thing is, you know where you need to go, and his job is to get us a little off. That's it. That's really his job. And he does that, you know, we get tricked enough times, he does it very effectively. If we're down, you know, you're coming up from the airport, you're on the connector is 75 and 85. So there's a spot where it splits, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, anyone made this mistake before? So you're in that one lane, what's that?
Multiple times.
All right, I'm not the only one. So you're up in the metal lane, and, you know, a couple degrees this way, a couple degrees that way, and you're trying to get home, 85 north, and you end up 75, you end up Marriott, and you have no idea, right? That's a tiny little decision, little off course that you've got at that one critical point. That all you're doing afterwards is driving straight. You're not making any more decisions later. Yeah? You just keep going. And you just keep going. You know, Marietta's not so bad. If you really keep going, 75, you end up in, I don't know where, in Illinois, wherever it is, right? Chicago or something.
Detroit.
Okay. So, you know, that's a far cry from Togo Hills. So that one little decision, that one little, not decision even, you know, spaced out or on the phone or whatever, that one little off track that you get ends up being a big deal. So that's a great mashal, I think, for what the Satan is all about. He's not. Yes, he's powerful. Yes, he can control our lives if we let him. But his job really is to get us off track just that little bit, so that we just follow through what we're going to do anyway, type of thing. And once we're off, we're off. It's very hard then tshuva and getting back on track, and that's the whole job of Satan. So when we give kavod to somebody else, we're allowing that person to actualize who they really are, because we just lose sight of that. We lose sight of our potential and where we can go and what we can do and what we have to offer the world, and all that good stuff is often lost. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome. Oh, yeah. Oh. So that's what Sutton is all about. So giving kavod, he's trying to teach us in this piece, giving kavod is not simply, again, being nice. That's true. It's not just chesed. If it's a chesed involved, that's true. But it's much more than that. We are allowing the person that I'm talking to or that I'm interacting with to become. We're allowing them to reach their potential. We're allowing them to become what Hashem wants them to become, which is much, you know, it's much greater than just in the moment a chesed, or in the moment, you know, it's much grander than that. It's really allowing that person to connect with who they are inside, which means that their growth is to my credit. Whatever growth that they achieve because of the kavod, because of the respect, because of the compliment, because of the whatever that I gave them, the good feelings that they had, the realization, the whatever they come to because of it is to my credit. And all that growth that happens afterwards, instead of being off track, is now on track, because they reappreciate who they are, and they're important to other people, and they're weighty. Who they are carries weight in the world. All that is a result of the cover that I give. That's the theme that he presents, and it's a theme that I want to just develop with you a little bit more as we go through. There's a famous Jewish psychologist. Passed away in 1979, I believe, named Abraham Maslow. Maslow was a professor at Brandeis University in Boston. And psychologist, sociologist, I'm not sure exactly, but in the human sciences. So he is famous. I'm certainly not a student of his, haven't read a lot of what he has written, but he is famous for the hierarchy of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Familiar? Some smiles here. Okay, so he's famous for the five, you know, his typically depicted as a pyramid. I googled it to get a graphic of it, and there's just, I mean, a gazillion different models and colors and pictures, whatever, of his, you know, his hierarchy of needs. And he basically says, and I saw this quote, by the way, Rav Noach Weinberg Zatzal, I just found out a couple months ago, put out a sefer, one of the last things he probably did, he put out a sefer in 2008 on pleasure. Right? He did lots of famous classes over the years about the different levels of pleasure. So he talks about Maslow and how the two models fit together. It's fascinating. Yeah. I think it's always, again, interesting when Torah, you know, when some psychologists discover something in Torah, I think it's always half the psychologists are Jews anyway. So his five, maybe more than that, his five, the five level, the five, you know, the hierarchy of needs starting at the bottom is physiological, just basic human needs, shelter, food, clothing, etc. Next one up is safety. And he's in order of importance. I mean, one needs air, one needs water before even safety. God forbid, live in a bad neighborhood, it's not safe. Okay, there's, you know, there's ways theoretically around that, but no water, no air. So physiological safety, belonging, and love. And the top two are often, by others at least, are grouped together, esteem and self-actualization. Is at the top of that pyramid. So his point was, his message to us is, and it's a very important point, I think, and that is, we need to take care of basic needs before we can really focus on higher level needs, right? It's very hard to self-actualize and do all that one can do when you get all food on the table. It just doesn't work, right? Our needs drop, someone loses a job, God forbid, so they're changing the world, but all of a sudden they're focused on, how do I pay the rent next month? How do I pay the mortgage next month? So our energies are redirected. Which is, we should note, that, you know, through history, great, great Jews, the Rambam is an example, a very obvious example, of someone who suffered tremendously at the hands of the Muslims, parents die, he lost his brother, I mean, just horrific stories that I don't think people know, you know, people are not so familiar, I think, with the Rambam, and yet he did what he did, which is incredible. Rashi, towards the end of his life, is dealing with the Crusades, and there's many, many stories where people were forced to look at their basic needs, and yet still accomplish tremendous things on the higher level. So it's not to say one can't, but it's obvious that if one's, you know, it's just obvious that if one can't take care of the bottom, they can't focus at the top really at all. So that was his message to the world. So again, what the Satan does is to try and get us off track from our higher level needs. That's what he's out there to do. We're trying to actualize and become and grow and develop. And the Satan's always getting us off track and saying, no, this is important, this is important, and that's physical pleasure. Rav Noach talks a lot about always trying to get us off of where we are. And when we give that kavod, that respect, and that deference, and that ha'aracha, that value to that person, we remind the person where they really are, what they can really do, what they really need, and how, you know, how allow themselves to push themselves to push up a little bit higher on the pyramid. So there's a quote here I want to share with you, talking about pass those out. Talking first and foremost about the covet for ourselves, appreciating who we are before we get the covet for others. This is a quote from Rabbeinu Yonah that I think I saw it quoted once before. This is not in the famous Shari Tshuva, but in Shari Avoda, which Rav Wolbe quotes. And it says at the very beginning of the Sefer, Pesach HaRishon Hu Sheyeda HaIsh HaOved. The first thing that one needs to understand is a person should know Erech Atzma, the value of himself. A person needs to appreciate who they are. V'yakir Ma'aloso, and recognize his strengths. Umalas Abosav, and the strengths, the greatness of our forefathers, v'digulosam, and their greatness, v'chashivusam, and their importance, v'chibosam etzal habari yisbach, and our the love that Hashem has for us, that Creator has for us. V'yishtadel is the most important part of this whole piece. V'yishtadel v'yischazek tamid. Person has to work, put forth effort, and strengthen themselves always, constantly. Lahamid atzma b'mala hahi, to put themselves up in this light, in this perspective of our importance. Lisnoeg ba tamid, and to act that way constantly. And he goes on to say that a person doesn't appreciate that. The what a person can do is that, you know, the evils of what a person can do if one doesn't appreciate who they really are endless. I mean, there's just no limit to what a person, the trouble and the averos and the person can get into if they don't really appreciate who they are. You know, we're a mess. So it's this appreciation that there's a Bore, that there's a creator, that he created us, that there's a Tzelem Elohim, a piece of him, so to speak, inside of each of us. That's the beginning of the conversation. That true kavod doesn't come, yes, it comes from each other, and that's the focus of our talk today, giving kavod to others. But at its core, kavod really comes from the fact that we are Tzelem Elohim, we are part of him, and we are chashivas comes from that fact. We could get zero kavod our entire lives from anybody else. That fact is still a fact. Right? Rabbi Rosenbaum's, I don't know exactly what his lotion is these days, but you know, no matter what you do or say to me, I'm still a worthwhile person, is the way I heard it 25 years ago at a convention that he spoke out. That's this message, and that's a huge, huge, huge message for everyone to hear. Because it's totally, you know, let's face it, it's lost largely in our society. And this, again, is a whole other topic, but this is where the secular world is totally lost. Right? The core, elemental place where everything starts, is there's a Bore, and he created us, and he has a mission for us, and we're at Tzelem Elohim. You know, obviously the secular world can't, that just doesn't go there. There's no such thing in their lexicon. It doesn't exist. So, when they talk about importance, and they talk about importance of taking care of others, and they struggle. It's almost funny to watch them struggle with, like, why? There's a book called Winning Friends and Influencing People. You ever read it? Dale Carnegie? Wrote it, it's about 100, almost 100 years old, I think, 19-teens. And I read it, it's an interesting story, I read it because a friend of mine was in Eretz Yisrael, Mar Sameach, and there's one of the Rebbeim there, and the Tully Kaplan, Shlita, was a Mashkiach in Baltimore High School many years ago. He's a big tzaddik. Big tzaddik. So he suggested that my friend read this book. So my friend came back to Baltimore and said, yeah, you should read this book. And I said, book? Goyish, what do you want, man? I should read this book. I ended up reading it, and it was just an amazing, amazing book. It really is very, it's tremendous. Totally secular vantage point. And it's been too many years, I can't tell you if there's anything in there objectionable, I don't remember. But I do remember him dealing with this issue, like winning friends and influencing people. He says, isn't this just manipulative? Like, aren't I just doing things to get people to do what I want them to do? And he wiggles out of it somehow, I don't remember exactly how. But, you know, you see there how the secular world can't talk. I mean, they have nowhere to go, because they don't accept what were the basic premise of everything, which is, you know, there's a source to all this. They say it'd be nice because it's nice to be nice. I mean, what was that? It doesn't mean anything. So the beginning of any conversation about Bein Adam L'Chaveru starts with a recognition of this fact. Okay. Anyway, I just, you know, Mrs. Feldman and Sip, and if she wanted to give in and out like this, and please don't tell her I gave it to you like this, she would be maybe a card and laminate and graphics and all that. But it's, you know, short lines like this, I think, put in the right place in your life, calendars or your wall somewhere, whatever, make a big difference. You know, Mrs. Fruchman in the office now, she puts some stuff on the walls, emails, and Zelly Pliskin, and it makes a difference. It really does resonate. So I thought I would share that with you. So moving on then from that basis, which is, again, a whole topic in and of itself, but getting into giving kavod to others. So there's a story that one of my mentors, Rav Moshe Eisman, shared with us years ago that I'd like to share with you. I think it's a very telling story. It's a Reader's Digest article that he must have read years ago. The story goes, excuse me, that two friends would take a walk every morning. And they would, in the course of their walk, in their routes, where there's a newsstand. So fellow would say good morning to the newsstand, you know, the operator, the mocher, and put down his quarter, 50 cents, take a newspaper, say thank you, and walk on. And the guy never responded. the guy behind the table, behind the, you know, the newsstand operator, never said anything. Nothing. Garnished. And this happened day in and day in, out, day in and day out. And the same thing happened. You know, Fred and Ted, they're walking along, and everything knows exactly what's going to happen. Fred says hello, the guy says nothing, Ted and Fred keep walking, right? Same exact story plays itself out. So eventually Ted just breaks down, you know, he's kept his tongue the whole time. Finally he says, why? Like, why do you bother saying hello to this guy? I mean, you know he's not going to answer. Like, what gives? What's the deal? So Fred says, I have an obligation to be a mensch. What his response is irrelevant. It has nothing to do with me. It'd be nice. I'd appreciate it. But it doesn't bother me. I've got to do what I've got to do. So that's a tremendously important lesson in giving kavod to others. It, of course, it's supposed to be a two-way street. There's no question about it. But we're the Tzelem Elokim. We appreciate that. We understand that. Not everyone else does on the same level. Or someone's moody. They're not focused. They're totally... whatever it is, right? But our obligation is to give that kavod to that person. Whether they get it or appreciate it or not is irrelevant. Totally irrelevant. So, first, I remember asking Rav Weinberg Zatzal, Mrs. Feldman's father, about this story. Having thought about the story and the message that Rav Eisen shared with us. Because the Gemara in Brachos, the Gemara says that if you don't return shalom to someone, you're a gazlan. The Gemara calls you a gazlan. You're stealing. It's thievery. Take a hello. Someone's giving you kavod. They're saying hello. They're recognizing you. In Hebrew, it's a bracha. They're blessing you. And yet you're not responding. That's stealing. So my question to the Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal was, can you do that? Can you do what Fred did in the story? Can you say hello to someone knowing full well they're not going to respond because there's an issur in the Torah, lifnei iver, l'sitin michshol? You're not allowed to give, you know, cause someone else to do an avera. Now, yeah, the Gemara's case is giving a nazir wine or, you know, there's a more concrete examples. But if you're a gazlan, you're a gazlan. I mean, the Gemara says that, right? It doesn't mean necessarily you got to pay back, whatever, but there's a concept of stealing here. So the Rosh Yeshiva told me, no, there's no problem. As long as you are mochel that responds, you're fine. As long as you're mochel, you know ahead of time, if he responds, great. If he doesn't respond, it's also fine. That's because ultimately, you know, he didn't explain, but in this light, ultimately, you're giving him that kavod. Hopefully it's getting in there somehow. And your kavod is not detracted because you understand who you are. You're the Tzelem Elokim. You understand what Rabbeinu Yonah just said. You're not going to fall apart because he doesn't respond. I was a dorm counselor for a bunch of years in Baltimore, in Israel. And every morning I would go back a little before 9 o'clock and wake up the guys again. Meaning Shacharis at 7:15. Shacharis at 7:15 and then breakfast. You want to see the fastest breakfast eaters on the planet? The yeshiva guys who want to take a nap. So they would down. I never got into this. Like, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't take a nap. You know, 20 minutes power nap just didn't work. But there are many guys who would down their cereal, run off, you know, back to bed for half an hour, 8:30 to 9, whatever. So my job was not only to wake them up at 7 for Shacharis, but wake them up again at 9 for Seder. Rabbi Neuberger Zatzal's line was that there's only two places in Baltimore that people sleep during the day. Levendale's, which is an old age home, and Nashville. That was his line. Anyway, so I would go back at 9 o'clock, and every morning, like clockwork, there was one of the Bachram who lived in my dorm, whose name was Binyamin, and every morning I would say, good morning, Binyamin. And every morning he would ignore me. And it's been on. I mean, for months, for years. I don't remember exactly how long. And on one hand, I was mochel. On the other hand, it bothered me. Like, hello, I'm here. Like, you know, like nothing. Until Purim came. It's a Purim night. Purim night, he was drinking. And there's a masiba. And I get to, like, a party in the dining room. So he spins over to me like a dreidel. He's already wasted. And he like dreidels over to me, and a big hug, and he says, Mordechai, you should know, I really appreciate you saying good morning to me, and dreidels off to whoever else. And that was it. And then Shushan Purim comes along, and I say good morning, and he says, nothing! Nothing! As if nothing happened. And this went on, you know, I don't know how long. So it's just, the Gemara says a person is known kisa b'kasa b'kosa, right? There's three ways that you can really know a person. One of them is when he's shikur. So I was, you know, on one hand, again, I was mochel. On the other hand, it was upsetting. Here, Purim came along. He was just wasted. And he shared what he shared. It was really very encouraging to me that he was, you know, was getting in. I never quite could understand why, you know, like what was going on with him. But that's not the point. The point is that it was making its roshim, and it was showing kavod to him. And that was, under the circumstance, that was the right thing. That was the right thing to do. So, well, the story from Reader's Digest that Rabbi Eisman shared with us, and this, you know, real life story that happened to me, shows that what the, you know, the response is really not the point. We are obligated to show kavod. Makdim shalom b'chol adam yocham and zakai the gadol hador. He had so much resting on his head. The Gemara says no one ever beat him to say hello. I feel enough me b'shuk, right? Even a non-Jew who he never saw before, he'll never see again. He's not a member of his shul, nothing. But he would always say shalom, because he's showing kavod to Tzelem Elokim. That was Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, through my records. The couple other other examples, just to hopefully open our thinking up you know, about this, about showing kavod. First, again, Revolva writes that it's interesting to note that the low sases of kavod are delineated in psukim and in halacha, meaning there's an isser of onos dvar. Can't say something to somebody else that will pain them, that will make them feel bad. So it's an isser d'oraisa, right? We should keep that, like we keep chazer, we'd be in a good, you know, we should, that's something for us to all work on, I think. But onos dvarim is an isser d'oraisa. Embarrassing someone, we all know stories, Tamar and different stories, isser d'oraisa. Might be a Harav Ayav, or even, right, Tamar was willing to get up for life. Right, many examples I'm sure we can think of. Lashon Hara, Mosi Shemra, there's a long list of low sases having to do with Beinah Machaver, and having to do with showing respect. Right? If you speak negatively about someone behind their back, obviously you don't take them seriously. I mean, that's, you know, like, you can't be honest. If you ever once you find out, you can't share with that person. You can't take them honestly. You never know what they're sharing. You don't know what they're thinking about you. They don't have a positive, right? A Baal Lashon Hara doesn't have a positive, doesn't hold you in esteem. Doesn't think you, you know, you're a weighty, important individual. They just turn around and tell the whole world about. So all those, the low sases he points out are there. They're black and white. They're explicit. The assays are really missing. They're not there at all. And the Gemara is certain examples, certain stories, whatever, but certainly in Psukim, there's little, if any, assays having to do with COVID, having to do with how to treat your fellow, our peers, our other people. Revolver writes, that's because, going back to the theme he said before, our job in giving COVID to somebody else, the positives, the assays, is to bring out their opinions, to bring them out who they are, to allow them to actualize. Well, that's unique. Every single person has their own who they are, their own Tzelem Elokim, their own person, their own everything. So we can't, the Torah can't come along and tell you specifically exactly what things, positive things to do for somebody else. With the exception of the basics for Kibud Av V'Aim and Kavod Rav, which are certain explicit things. But with those exceptions, there are no specific suggestions, so to speak, or mandates by the Torah. Because every person is unique. So what the cover that he needs or she needs is different than the cover that she needs to bring out their person and to make them feel positive, make them feel that they can grow and actualize and all the things that we touched on before. It's totally unique. And we'll come back to that point in a second. Revolver goes on and talks about, I think it's fascinating, especially these days, he doesn't talk about emails, but he talks about writing letters. He really quotes his Rabbi Rav Yerucham, that when we send a letter, or again, these days people don't send letters so much, we send an email. How do we show kavod for the recipient when we send that email? Meaning, does it start with good morning? Does it start with shalom? Does it start with hey, how are you? Does it start with some type of opening? Which in the old days, you write letters, you know, letter would. Does it end appropriately? Are we treating the person on the other end as just the recipient of a, you know, like a computer? You know, we don't see them, we're not talking to them, we're not even really in our conversation, we're not talking to them like a real person, we're just, you know, you shoot out a message. Is that how our, again, Rufim didn't even dream of emails and how bad it's gotten. But that's something to think about. We just shoot off, we're busy, or, you know, half the emails these days come, you know, the message at the bottom is sent from my BlackBerry or sent from my iPhone, so we know for sure the person's, you know, on the fly. Hopefully they're not driving when they're responding. But they're not, we don't spend a lot of time in these communications. And that's a perfect example, Volba writes, of something we have to think about. Is, are we showing color? Are we showing we respect and appreciate the person, the receiving end of this message, is not just, you know, they're getting a job done, or they need information, or they need, right? We're showing that we respect them as a human being. That's one, you know, he goes through specific examples of writing letters, but just for us to think about in our correspondence. Another thing that comes to mind is in several things Rabbi Eisenman used to point out to us, and that is in, we used to have a chabur with him, 5 guys, 10 guys, whatever, going to his office, and he would talk about a different topic, different topics, sometimes question and answer, sometimes a sefer, whatever it was. So I remember one year we'd been going to him, you know, for a long time, typically after mincha. So mincha, we had hats and jackets. After mincha, you put your hat and jacket away, typically. So I remember him saying, like yesterday, he said, he doesn't mean this in any way to be critical of anyone, and no one should change what they do, but he would never go into his rebbeim, his rebbeim, you know, as Rashi was Rabban Cutler, he would never go into his rebbeim with just a shirt. And to go into a rebbe without a jacket, it would just never happen. And again, he apologized for saying it, no one should change, and of course, the next time, no one will go in without a jacket on. But it's just the sensitivity that you're going in front of a Rebbe, you're going in front of a mentor, you're going in front of someone who's closer to Sinai than you are, someone who has a message for you, someone who has Torah, someone who has life, someone who has Musar, someone who has an approach to living, which he really did instill in us, and to show, you know, a certain amount of kavod. And we have to understand that the kavod, you know, the Mishnayos and Avos, we can only... Chairs aren't giving COVID, right? Tables aren't giving computer. None of this, because they don't count. There's nothing there. It's specifically because we're Tzelem Elokim that when we show COVID to somebody else, it means something. So when you show that COVID, a jacket in front of a Rebbe, for example, it's not just a message about who he is and what he represents in Torah and Talmud Chochmah, but it's a representation of who you are. The galus of the Adam, of the person giving the COVID, is really what it's ultimately is the message. Or another thing, again, I forget how it came up, but he was talking about school settings and teaching, and I can relate to this, and that is handing in half sheets of paper. Right? I give mini quizzes, and sometimes I get half sheets, and maybe I should be more particular. He said, that's not, you know, it would never be. He's from England. So I said, in England, you know, there's a certain amount of COVID that, you know, the British have, that the Americans, for whatever reason, just, you know, America's a Marlboro man and Western, and, you know, it's cool, right? So in England, it's more, there's a certain amount of COVID still that exists, I think, I hope. So he said, you just wouldn't do that in school. Secular school, he went to public schools, I think, in England. You know, you just wouldn't do that. You wouldn't give it like half a sheet and it's rough, you know, it's all whatever. You just wouldn't do it. There was no, it went Rebbe, yeah, it didn't make a difference. You wouldn't give a secular teacher a half torn sheet of paper. It just would never happen. It would just never be. So things like that, and there are many of them, again, we're not necessarily taught these types of behaviors. And we do, I am with you in saying, you know, are they so important? You know, maybe some of them are not. But there's certain hanhagos, especially Torah, Tamei Chachamim, Beis Medrash, Shul, certain things that we should be accustomed ourselves to that shows kavod to the place, and shows kavod, getting back to kavod chaver, and just shows respect to other people. You know, how we interact with others shows a lot about them, but again, it shows much more really about who we are, what we're all about. So going back again to Rav Volba's point, and then stop and see if there's any questions before we move on to last few points I want to make. Again, Rav Volba's point is that the assays, the get up and do's of kavod, are really not spelled out because they're so individualized. And Rav Volba, in that vad, this section is broke up into vadim, which means, you know, he would sit down with a bunch of bachrim and talk about the topic and then give homework. He would basically give, you know, because growth doesn't just happen by listening to someone talk, it happens by doing the work, doing the exercise. So his exercise for that particular point was, is to sit and think for 15 minutes daily about someone in your life and how what they would appreciate from you to show kavod to them, that they would feel better about themselves, better about the relationship, that you get closer to them. You know, what could you do for that person that would change their life in some small way? But individualize it to them, not just a blanket. You know, different people need different things. So think about it. Think about it. And that's, you know, that's not an easy task, I think, for most people to spend that kind of time to seriously think it through. You know, it might be hard. First few times would be really hard. I think, I suspect many of us do it when there's you know, someone got in the hospital, we think through what we do. But to really just think on a daily basis, what can I do for someone? I saw them in school, I saw them at school, whatever. What can I do for them that they would need or they would appreciate? That's not so simple. Okay, any thoughts or questions first before I go on? Yes, ma'am.
I'll just say this story. I don't know if you ever heard what you were saying about when you were talking to your roommate. There was this mashgiach that used to go into a factory every day, and he would always say hello to the doorman, and he never responded. And then one day he said hello, and they were closing up, and everyone was leaving, and the doorman's like, wait, we can't walk up yet. And they're like, why? He's like, the rabbi didn't come out. And they're like, how do you know? He said, every day he comes in, he says hello, and he leaves, and he says goodbye. So they went through the whole factory to try and find him, and they found him. He was locked in the freezer. He went to go check the meat, and he had got, like, obviously stuck or whatever.
Wow.
So that was just, like, yeah, you never know what.
Amazing story.
Even saying hello and goodbye to, like, the doorman or whatever.
Save someone's life.
Yeah.
Right. Amazing. Amazing. It's you know. It's interesting. The doorman never responded, but he obviously he noticed.
Right.
I mean, he really made a difference to him. There's the rabbi, you know. Let's face it, Jews are looked up to. You know, they hate us and they love, you know. This is a kind of funny relationship. But it's a double standard, but it's true. Jews, you know, that's why Jews involved the scandal. It's on the front page of every, you know. It's unfortunate, but it's true. That's a very good point. Okay, other thoughts? Yep. Okay. So I do want to touch on the topic of marriage and of kavod for spouse, for husband. The first I want to preface this by saying I'm not here to nudge anybody, to, you know, it's not obviously, but the fact is that as really teenagers, really high schoolers, and certainly young women, it's important to think about the, you know, the relationship that Kadosh Baruch Hu has planned for us, which is in marriage, which is the ultimate relationship, much more important than our relationship with our parents, much more important is a dangerous word, but I think you know what I mean, much more important than our relationship even with our kids, with our siblings, really with anyone in the world, ultimately is a relationship with our spouse. And that's, you know, the ideas of half neshama coming together, you know, there's a lot of interesting ideas out there about it, but it is ultimately the relationship that is mashlam the person. All relationships allow a person to grow, and we allow them to grow, no question, but it's clear from Chazal that is the relationship. Al kein yazov ish es aviv es imo v'davak v'ishto, right, posuk and v'reishis, perek beis, that's the relationship. To think that one gets married, you know, finds their Mr. Right, so to speak, Ashkach Apprentice and Ashtablis and everything else that goes into it, and then engagement and Kala and we get married, and then everything goes on autopilot, is a mistake. It's a mistake that most singles make, because it's just the nature of the way, part of it's Hollywood, you know, there's different reasons why we make that mistake. Varen Feldman, in his book The River, the Kettle, and the Bird, he wrote, you know, several years ago about Shalom Bais, he says that, and working with Bachem over the years, that the expectations of what marriage is are just off. Again, much more than a lot of reasons for it, I think. So it's important to think about this, not just when a person gets engaged, not just when a person is married, but before that, to think about what that relationship looks like and the kavod that one gives one, you know, one to the other. It's interesting, I saw Sefer recently points out beautifully. He says, what motivates people to get married? Typically two things. Bein adam la'atz, bein adam la'makom, let's start with there, right? It's a mitzvah to get married, it's a mitzvah to have a family. And bein adam la'atzmo, we have our needs, our desires, our wants, our interests. There's a list of things that we want out of a relationship and out of a family, but the center of that discussion is me. So our focus is mokum and asmo. What's the truth of it is, though, ultimately, what's the primary aspect of marriage? It's been on the chavera. So by definition, the whole relationship's got to spin and got to change after the chasna. It has to. Because it's predicated, not erroneously, there's no mistake here, right? Because Baruch Hu set it up this way. No one's really thinking, and they're looking for the shidduch, that bin adam chaver, I can't wait to, you know, allow my husband to grow. You know, that's not usually what happens, you know. It's not really what's going through our, I want to grow. These are all healthy, again, good things. But again, ultimately, the focus of the relationship, if it's a healthy, good, strong relationship, pivots, is changed. It's a whole paradigm shift after the chasna. Which means that we've got to change, we've got to shift, we've got to realign our thinking and our focus. And that's all about, giving kavod. Rav Dessler famously says, it's a long piece and it's an important thing to read, I think Rav Dessler in Chelek Aleph, in Kuntra Sachesed, it's like page 30, 31, talks about Ahava, right? Ahava is love. Love comes from the Shorash of Hav. Hav means to give. That giving is ultimately what leads to love. Right? It's a whole piece there. People think sometimes it's the other way around. We want to give to someone because we love them. It is cyclical to a certain extent, but the bottom line is, when you invest yourself in somebody else, that creates, the byproduct of that is love. That's true with parents, it's true with everybody. Friends, when you give to them, you're bonded together. You're showing kavod, you're showing, you know, the way he puts it, interestingly enough, is there's a piece of you in them. So, in a certain sense, they're heavier, they're weightier, they're more important in the world now because, there's, you know, they're kind of, they're them, and they're a whole bunch of other people too. There's different, you know, when you show kavod, you show ahava, you show love to somebody else, and you give to them, you're showing that they are important to you, and again, that allows them to become greater and bigger. And going back to Maslow, you know, love is necessary in the bottom of the triangle to grow higher. All that is what Ahava is all about, and Ahava is uniquely, let's face it, every relationship has a dynamic of giving and of love and connectivity, but it's specifically a marriage where that's the most important element. I mean, it's very natural by parents, it's very natural by children. By a spouse, it's much less natural because it's let's face it, it's a difficult, again, it's hard, you know, singles it's impossible to fully understand until you're married, but by definition, it's something which takes work. And therefore, that ahava has to be, whereas in some other relationships, it's just a given. You know, a baby, cute, and they need you, and, you know, it's obvious, it just happens. Whereas with a spouse, with a husband, we need to work hard at doing that hav all the time, giving that kavod on a regular basis. This touches also on the concept, Rabbi Tatz talks about this, Maharal's, about, I think I got this from one of my classes, it's Mima, the 1-2-3 process. It's not the way the Zohar puts it, but the 1-2-3 is a Kosh Baruch who gives you a gift. Yeah, is this from your class? I don't remember. Kosh Baruch gives you a gift in the beginning. You didn't earn it, but you got it. Step two is he took it away, takes it away. And then step three is you've got to work the rest of your life to regain it. Right? That we see that all over the place. We see it everywhere. So, again, Rabbi Tatz explains it beautifully. So that's certainly true in marriage, where in the very beginning, I like to compare, really, you know, dating and then marriage to rocket, and in the beginning there's sparks and there's fire and there's excitement and there's a lot of energy and all that. That's a gift from Hashem. That's to get people together, that's to make shidduchim, to build a bais neman. All that happens, the magnetism that exists in the beginning of a relationship, and then the Kadosh Baruch Hu takes that gift away and says, now you gotta earn it, now you gotta work at this relationship and show the kavod to your husband so that it's yours. Right, the Anani Kavod were given to us, just another example as many. The Anani Kavod were given to us as a gift in the Midbar. We lost it with the angles of, and then through that whole process, 120 days total, or 80 days total, we regained them. The Anani Kavod came back after Moshe Rabbeinu returned in Yom Kippur, because we earned them, and they stayed with us till the Patira of Moshe Rabbeinu, till Aaron passed away. So, you know, again, this comes at time, many, many times. He shows us a glimpse of what it could be, what a relationship could be like, takes that away and then forces us to regain that on our own, which is ultimately what he wants from us. He wants us to grow. He wants us to actualize. He wants us to bring out our potential. So in thinking about this, again, there's many different topics flow into this, but in thinking about this, the closer we are to somebody, the easier it is to see their shortcomings. Right? You see that with friends, you see that with everybody. So that's certainly true in a marriage. We often pick up on shortcomings of someone that we missed in the first stage, stage two comes along, stage three, certain shortcomings, and it becomes harder to give. It becomes harder to, baby, we just ignore them. Diapers and 3 o'clock in the mornings and everything else, they're relatively easy to ignore. But a spouse, a soulmate, someone we're building our lives with, part of which I made that relationship is those shortcomings can become very glaring, can become very obvious. And our job, again, is to basically ignore them. I shouldn't say ignore them, that's a whole other talk, but to allow ourselves to give that covenant and to show that love and to give, irrespective of those shortcomings, which he has, which I have, which we all have. Those are gifts from Hashem for us to work on. But to appreciate that we still need to do that, to be giving that covenant, and still need to be giving that person and building that relationship. Now, what's interesting, again, Rehoboam himself has this list of covenant. These essays on Kovod, he has a piece on Shalom Bayis and on marriage, and he reiterates this idea again that each person is going to need something different from their spouse. And he really doesn't elaborate, he doesn't get into that any further. So this is a great example in my mind of where psychology can help and illuminate certain things. And that is, I showed this I think last time, the model that we, part of JMI, there's many different seminars and models that we've given or that we're designing. So one of them, the main one really we're focusing on, is called the 5 love languages, which I think some of you have heard of, the shakes of heads, which is an unusual group that so many Jews know about it because it's a Christian-based book. Not to give any guilt to anyone. I've read it many times. I do want to tell you that we got permission. It's a long, interesting story. I can tell you another time. But we got permission from them to republish it without. We censored the book, basically. So it is available. It's at the printer right now. We've done that with the guidance of Shmuel Kamenetsky and Shalom Kamenetsky, taking out the Christian content so that it can be available to Jews, because it's one of the, I would argue, ladies, without exaggerating, it's one of the most important books, in the world today. It really is. And I called the author and we asked permission or whatever. So when I wrote to him, I said, Hashem is Hashem. God has obviously gifted you with this insight, Chachma Bagayim Tamid, to share with the world. And I firmly believe that. I haven't found it in Chazal yet. It's got to be there somewhere, this concept. But it allows one to take this whole idea of giving and make it more practical. So just real quick, he says, this is one of the reasons it's so beautiful, is because I can tell it to you in 90 seconds. He says, everyone feels loved and appreciated in 5 different ways. The trick, though, is that everyone has a mama lashon, has a language or two that ascends to the top, that's more important to them than other languages. And the trick is to figure out what that language is for your spouse, or kid, or really anyone else, and to speak that language to them. And the 5 love languages, you probably know them better than I do. Quality time, acts of service, gifts, gift giving, physical touch, and words of affirmation. Those are 5 love languages. And again, different people, different things resonate. Like most men, for example, words of affirmation are huge. Famous male ego, right? Men want to hear that they're great. It's true, ladies. It's not true. It's interesting, in the book, he doesn't talk about gender differences at all. He doesn't go there at all. This is interesting. I didn't ask why. But there's certain things that... So a man, for example, gifts might be nice, but it's not the multi-million, billion-dollar industry it is for women. Like flowers and chocolate and whatever. It's just there's a different dynamic for the gender. So to figure out what one's spouse, what kind of kavod, what kind of ahava, what kind of ha that person needs, and to give it. Now, he says beautifully, just like a mashgiach would in the yeshiva, he says, you don't feel comfortable doing that. Your wife needs gifts, and you're not a gift giver, and you're thrifty, and you want to save all the money. Speaking to a lot of guys when he says that. tough. That's the way, you know, the way we would say it. Because Baruch Hu put that dynamic in the relationship for you to learn to be a gift giver. That's the point. That's exactly the point. I mean, he knows most couples don't speak the same language. So you and I would understand that's Hashkacha Pratis. Hashem designed it that way so that, I mean, if it's very easy for you to give what the other person needs, or if it's natural for you to be, you're a gift receiver, so you like giving, and the, you know, gifts are just a common currency, so there's no growth. I enjoy giving, you enjoy receiving, vice versa, that's great, but there's no growth. It's specifically where you have to push yourself, and where it's not so comfortable, and you got to really think, what will my wife appreciate now? That's where the growth is all, that's where the growth really is. Lies. Okay, just as finished as a, oh, it's very late, and this is a closing comment or two, ladies, and that is the Rabbi Y was spoke a few weeks ago, Parsha Shlach, shared a Ramban. It's a Ramban I had never heard before. It's like shocking, I had never heard it, but the Ramban in short says that David HaMelech comes to the Navi, you're all familiar, and says, it's not right, I'm in a palace, the Mishkan, there's no Beis HaMikdash yet. We need to build a Beis HaMikdash. The Navi says, go for it, Hashem. We must give you Hatzlacha. The Navi has a Nevuah, comes back and says, David, you're not the man. Shlomo is going to build the Beis HaMikdash. Says the Ramban, the reason David was not allowed to build the Beis HaMikdash was because he alone asked for it. If Klal Yisrael had asked for it, he would have been allowed to build it. And more than that, this is hundreds and hundreds of years after Yeshua brings them into Eretz Yisrael. If Klal Yisrael earlier would have done it, in other words, it was a grassroots movement, it was a popular movement going, not on your own, I'm doing my own thing. We don't do that. But if Klal Yisrael had gone to the Shofet, whatever Tkufa we're talking about, whatever time period, and gone to the Shofet and said, this isn't right. We're here, we have control, we need to build a Beis HaMikdash, why don't we do it? If they would have done it, the Beis HaMikdash would have been built much earlier. And much better, much, you know, in a whole different way. And even David HaMelech, with his issue, you know, his issue, because he was a sort of warrior and soldier and blood in his hands, if Klal Yisrael would have asked for it, it would have happened. It would have happened. So, the message there, there's much more to say on that, but the message, maybe one other quick thought, and I was listening to a shiur this morning from Chief Rabbi Jonathan Sachs from England, speaking of Britain. Beautiful idea. Again, if you're all familiar, the brothers take Yosef out to kill him for whatever reasons. They paskin on him. Reuven says, this isn't right. This isn't right. But Reuven doesn't have whatever it takes to stand up to the brothers and say no. So what does he do? He says, no, let's not kill him. We'll put him in the boar with the kavanah coming back and taking him out. And we all know the story. He comes back and he's gone. He's sold already. It's Ryan. Whatever. So the famous Medrash, again, I'm sure you've heard before, that if Reuven knew that the Torah was going to write about him for forever, that he went and tried to save his brother Yosef, he would have thrown him on his shoulders and carried him back to Yaakov. It would have been this, maybe, I'm not sure, you know, this half-baked response, which Reuven did, which was good, but not full. It would have been the whole thing, I don't care what you say, guys, I'm doing the right thing. But he wasn't sure. You know, he wasn't sure what the right thing to do was. So, I say that, both of this idea of Ramban and the story is mentioned by Reuven, in that this, as I start off by saying, we live in a generation which kavod to chaverim and kavod in general relationships, families, and again, especially in marriage, is a plague. I mean, there's really a major problem in the world out there. The firm Torah world is much better than the rest of the world, but we are being affected in a very significant way. I mean, significant way. It's, you know, the last few years it just seems to be spiraling. So we've got to do something about it. That means each person has to see themselves as a roofing, and not just say, like the Doros, you know, with the Shoftim, you know, whatever Hashem says we'll do, we'll build the base of it. Because no, we've got to do what needs to be done to make a difference. And it is my humble opinion that, again, this is the Nisayon of the door, is to make a change in how we do Bein HaMechavero. And there's a lot of good things being done out there in Sfarim being written, no question. I'm not saying nothing's been done. But to do something, and again, specifically in the area of Shalom Bayis education, the ideal would be high school kids learn a certain amount about Shalom Bayis and preparing, especially girls, preparing just because they're more mature and more focused and more. You can't talk to a 15-year-old boy about marriage. And certainly singles, and young women, and then certainly with marriage, you know, after the chasana, designing and helping, you know, this whole mission of JMI and what we're trying to do here is to create programs for different people, for not from, you know, I have to make it applicable to different audiences, but to create something which is going to speak to people and really allow change. Because reading books doesn't, it's nice, but it doesn't really do it. A lot of books out there, you know, research shows people buy these self-help books, they read them, put them back on the shelf. I'm guilty, right? You know, you read it, you put it back on the shelf, and nothing really happens, right? So the trick is shiurim, is classes, is groups, is, you know, whatever different types of things. Some mixed, some couples together, some just women, some just, you know, there's different ways of approaching them. So my point in sharing that with you is that there is an opportunity here. You know, think back to the different movements, Sarashner, I mean, many different movements throughout Klai Yisrael's history. That people looked at the movement and said, I don't know, what are you thinking, you're crazy, you know. She got a lot of that when she started the Beis Yaakov movement. And yet she knew she was right. She got Gedolim behind her. Chaim, the Rebbe, I mean, got Gedolim behind her. She changed the world. I mean, we're sitting here today, and Klai Yisrael is what it is today. Bochum can find wives. I mean, the whole world was due to the Klai Yisrael. I mean, she saved Klai Yisrael. Because she did something totally outlandish and totally weird. She saw a need and she did it. So I would argue that this is the new, you know, one of the biggest nisyonos and things to pick up. So each of us in our own way, and there are many ways, you know, if someone's interested, or you know that someone's interested in getting involved with what we're, I don't mean this to be an infomercial, I don't mean this to be the organization, but I mean Klai Yisrael and helping do what we can to make a difference in some small way in this arena of kavod and all relationships, and especially in marriage. It's an opportunity, maybe specifically because, you know, there are different programs around the country, but Atlanta, we're trying to make something like a national program to use the kochos and to use the gifts that Kosh Baruch Hu gave you, and that your parents gave you, and that Tmima gave you, and that you continue to grow yourselves, to consider getting involved with this in a way that you can share with other girls, or, you know, I'm going to get into it now, but there's different ways that one can get involved with this particular effort to make it available to Klai Yisrael. So, as in closing, ladies, we should all be benched. We should have a bracha that we should be zoche to show kavod to others in an appropriate way on a regular basis, and to get the kavod from others that we all, let's face it, we all need and appreciate, and we can grow from, and nachas yirsha nachas to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And shall be zochem and shall build a bayis neman b'Israel and educate the next door in kavod and kavod chaverim and kavod others. Mitzvah Hashem in Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim.